rest in the natural peace and ease of the mind and body that is the natural peace and ease of the mind and body. If anything should interfere with that sense of natural peace and ease, attend to that. So that's from one of our monastic elders, the Thai forest tradition, Western Thai forest tradition, Ajahn Amaro. Do you like that quote?
Yes.
It really, I mean, I think I first heard it, I don't know, 15 years ago or more. And you know how sometimes when you just hear an instruction or a teaching and it resonates for you so much that it's immediately memorized? Even if it's not literally memorized, some other place in the mind and system just remembers it. It was like that for me with that one. So I wanted to bring it in and explore it a little bit. And those of you that really love it, you can come write it down afterwards and use it yourself. Use it a lot as a meditation instruction. The natural peace and ease that is the natural peace and ease. And I always smile when I realize that I'm about to come offer a reflection on things like natural peace and ease. I smile too when I'm about to offer reflections on joy, because when I think back almost 25 years ago when I started practice, if anybody had said to me that I would have any experience, much less anything to say about natural peace and ease or joy, I would have laughed you right out of this room. And it wouldn't have been, it would have been kind of a sarcastic laughter, like, ha ha ha, give me a break laughter. Those qualities were completely conceptual. I'm not even sure, especially the natural and peace and ease, not even sure they were a dream when I started practice. Maybe somewhere in the deep recesses of my being, there was a hope that maybe the invitation of the Buddha in acknowledging that life isn't always easy, and that when we struggle, it gets worse, and that peace is possible, and there are tools to support us developing and manifesting peace. Maybe I had a hope that that third part was true, that peace is possible. But wow, given the circumstances of my young teenage life, a lot of you know I started meditating when I was 17, they just weren't there. The body was in continual low-level pain from an intimate encounter. Interesting that we're right here. I had an intimate encounter with my car when I was 17 between the Sanderfeld exit and this exit with the sound wall. It wasn't pretty. So for about 6 years, my body was constantly in discomfort to pain. That was my experience of being embodied, of being a human being on the planet. And I was really young. And so, you know, I appeared healthy and strong. And in fact, that was not what my experience was. And then the heart and mind were even worse, just in terms of, you know, all the privilege that we have here. I grew up in Marin. I know this place. I know this place. When I heard, oh, up at the top of the hill in the church in Channing Way, I was like, oh, yeah. When I was in middle school, one of my best friends lived right over there, you know? There's so much privilege here. And, you know, may we use that privilege to manifest service that this planet needs. And at the same time, we all know that there's tremendous pain, even in the midst of Marin County, California. And that was certainly true in my own heart and in my own family. And it was pretty complicated. It was pretty heartbreaking. So peace and ease, when I first learned about the loving kindness practice, and I was taught some traditional phrases like, may I be protected and safe, may I be happy, may I be healthy and strong, and may I live with ease. And those are the phrases I teach now. I teach the Metta Retreat at Spirok every year, and those are the phrases we teach. And then we say, be creative, make them your own, use the words that work for you. But I just smile, because when I first heard them, it was like, I'm not feeling safe, I can't imagine feeling happy, my body is not strong, and what the heck is ease? You know, that was my actual experience. So obviously a lot has happened since then. And the practice, well, just looking at those of you I do know, there's a lot of experience here. We each have our own way of understanding that the practice does work. And it doesn't mean that the car accident didn't happen and our families of origin didn't happen and the chaos in the planet isn't happening. It means, yeah, everything's happening and peace is possible. And there can be a sense of ease, of non-struggle, of not shooting the second arrow when life does what life does, you know, making it worse for ourselves. All of that is the invitation and the possibility of this practice. So the term for the third noble truth that the Buddha taught, when I say peace is possible, came from our beloved Sylvia Boorstein. How many of you go sit with Sylvia on Wednesday mornings? Just a couple of you? Go visit her. If you can, you know, if you got the day off or whatever. Used to, yeah. 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 I have so much love for her. Now, my very first long retreat, early 20s, first long retreat that was held at Spirit Rock, so whenever that was. And she was one of my teachers, and she just kind of adopted me. I'm so grateful for that. You know, she adopts people, those of you that know her. It's not that I was super special. She adopts people. And, you know, so she first taught me the loving-kindness practice, that for me the loving-kindness and the compassion aspects were such a doorway in to my first glimpses of peace and ease. And then later she taught me to teach it, and now we teach it together. It's quite a privilege. So the ease and the peace of peace is possible, the cessation of the extra struggle. Oh yes, we still have bodies, we still have minds, the planet is what it is, and peace is possible. I'm really interested in ease as relaxation of the body and the mind, and that is an expression of peace. So I want to talk a little bit more about that. I'm also inspired by the experience, the direct experience of peace as letting go. So interestingly, in this reflection, I found myself pulling in a lot of quotes and things that have been around our communities for a very, very long time. I noticed that recently I've been interested in reclaiming some of these quotes that at certain points were so overused that I think we all stopped using them. We needed something fresh. I'm interested in reclaiming them and revisiting them. So here's one that you may or may not heard from Ajahn Chah, so the great master of our lineage. And he would put it like this. He would say, if you let go a little, you get a little peace. You let go a lot, you get a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you get complete peace. And so I started reflecting on that. I wonder if I have appropriate props. Oh, goody. It's so great to have allergies. You always have a Kleenex in your pocket. It's interesting. Up where I live now, for the first time in my whole life, I don't have allergies. The whole time I lived here, just constant. I'm sure I'm not the only one. So now I live in a place where I don't have to carry around Kleenex, but I've been down here for weeks now, so Kleenex. So I was thinking about this and how to work with it, not just as a great quote from Ajahn Chah, but actually what does it feel like, and more of an analogy. And so I thought, okay, Kleenex, I've always got one, so let's work with this. It's like, okay, here's the Kleenex, it's the thing, the object that there's struggle around, that it could probably be helpful to let go a little. So maybe before we let go a little, we've really got this thing in a grip. You know, grasping, clinging, becoming around it, my agenda, expectations, etc. I mean, look at this thing. We can't even use this now. I mean, that's a powerful metaphor, actually. We lose our potential when we have everything in a death grip. So it's in a death grip, and maybe I just let go a little. And it's like, oh, okay, well, now at least there's potential that I could use this and its functional manifestation as a Kleenex to wipe my nose. Okay, I've let go a little. So what if I let go a lot? It might look like this. Ooh, I let go a lot. I just picked it up again, though. Why? Because the underlying roots of those tendencies have not been transformed yet. So I can let go a lot and I can drop the load and I can experience the peace and ease of that. But the underlying tendency, the root of it that will flower around some other object or person or event is still alive and well. So I pick it back up again. Find my favorite object. It's really when we let go a lot and we get complete peace, as he was saying, that we get to put it down. It's just like rest. Rest in the natural peace and ease in the mind and body that is the natural peace and ease in the mind and body. Why wait? We can rest right now. Again and again and again. Because the way that I've been trained in the lineage out of Thailand is that it's small moments many times. And sometimes we're so much looking for the final encounter, the final release, that we miss the small ordinary moments many times. Of course, that famous line from Ajahn Buddhadasa from southern Thailand, you know, cessation for everyone, awakening for everyone. Every time the mind is not colored by wanting, by not wanting, and by delusion, there's a moment of peace. Those have ceased. It's freedom. May not be the letting go completely freedom, where it's all uprooted. There's still peace. So I always think in relating to the wanting, the not wanting, and the delusion, or sometimes called the defilements of mind, that which colors the purity of the awakened mind. I think of them as glasses. I wore glasses for a lot of my life. And so, you know, whether it's sunglasses or you wear glasses or reading glasses or something, we've had something on our face and it's like, oh, it's on our face and there's a little bit of color here. There's a little bit of wanting going on. It just starts to color. We have all these progressive lenses now. We can really start to kind of metaphorically get in relationship with this, like, oh, little bit of color coming in of wanting something. And the thing is that what it is that I might want is less important than actually being in relationship with the fact that the glasses are coloring. Because let's say the original object that I wanted was somebody to do what I wanted them to do. That's a great one. We all know that one. So a little bit of wanting come in. I wish they would do it that way and soon. And what are they doing? A little bit coming in, right? And then out of a little bit coming in, I turn and look at something else and go, I just want that sink to be cleaner. And then the phone rings and I pick it up and somebody says something and I want something. And it goes on and on. Because the colored lenses are shameless. They'll glue on to anything. It works the same with not wanting or aversion, and also the confusion or the delusion. So sometimes people say to me that the whole piece about letting go doesn't really work for them. I had somebody say to me in recent months, letting go feels a little bit too active to me, as if I have an agenda, like I have to let go. And I thought, oh, well, you know, that's a good point. When we're relating to it as a project, the project mind of I have to let go in order to be okay, that does feel a little bit active. And so I thought about bringing in peace, not just as letting go, but letting be. So this is a little bit about language, but language is our doorway into the heart. Let's see. Did I bring this one? Ah, yes. Here it is. So this is one of my old favorite poems. Started appearing around our scene in the 90s by the teacher and poet Donna Faulds. It's called Let Go, but it's very much about letting be. Let go of the ways you thought life would unfold, the holding of plans or dreams or expectations. Let it all go. save your strength to swim with the tide. The choice to fight what is here before you now will only result in struggle, fear, and desperate attempts to flee from the very energy you long for. Let go. Let it all go and flow with the grace that washes through your days, whether you've received it gently or with all your quills raised to defend against invaders. Take this on faith. The mind may never find the explanations that it seeks, but you will move forward nonetheless. Let go, and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores beyond your wildest dreams or destinations. Let it all go and find the place of rest and peace and certain transformation. That actually is my experience of the spiritual path. I was noticing that the line that touched me the most, and it really, for many years I had this memorized, I probably still do. The line that touched me the most just now was, let go and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores beyond your wildest dreams or destinations. That has been so true for me. And for me, I find that whatever teacher I may be working with, whatever technique I might be training in these paths, it's actually this essence of deep, deep listening that is the current that has led this practice and subsequently my life, you know, beyond my wildest dreams and to certain transformation. It's not so much about what or who, it's about how. And I just recently finished my own two-week retreat as a student. It was time to sit again. And I sit weeks and months every year of retreat, and I have my whole adult life. So this was actually a super short retreat for me, only 2 weeks. It's rare I sit less than a month. But this is what was the conditions were offering. And again, just coming home to the naturalness of our own rhythm in this practice. Once we've learned the basic techniques, okay, a breath is a primary object. I know how to come back to it. Know the quality of the inhale, the quality of the exhale, and the sensations, and all the little tools. Oh, there's a thought, you know, can note it. Can bring some compassionate attitude to the underlying fuel of the emotion. What's it feel like in the body? All these techniques and tools. So, so helpful. And once we learn them, not just conceptually, but in the marrow of our being, then it becomes less about what and more just about this current. That was my whole retreat. It's just this current. Wow, I noticed I haven't said anything in teaching about this retreat because it's too fresh. And I noticed that I was about to say something about it. I thought, okay, am I ready to say something about it? What I'll say is that there's a level of deep listening possible where we sit down and we know what to do, right, on a relative level. So then it's wide open. Like, it's completely pregnant with possibility and anything can happen. And we don't know anymore how long we're going to sit or what is going to be brought to the foreground of experience to be skillful. And we don't have to know. We can just swim in that and feel it and be informed in it. You know, in this retreat, I never had the faintest idea when I sat down to meditate whether it would be 2 minutes, 20 minutes, or 2 hours. And the entire time I sat there, I didn't know whether it was going to be 2 minutes, 20 minutes, or 2 hours, because I don't follow schedules in my retreats these days. I've been doing this a long time. I would stand up, and I had no idea, none, where I was going. And it doesn't mean I wasn't functional. It just means that I would stand up, the standing posture would happen, and then there was this pause What direction is the body turning? Now it's going this way. And then the thought will come, oh, maybe this is happening next. And then something else would happen. Just this flow. Just this flow. And we can actually live our whole lives that way. Functionally. It doesn't look the same. It's not slow. It's not as nuanced. Now, that's why we train for the nuance. But the deep listening, wow. Peace and ease is hugely available there. Then there's the peace and ease connected with humility. And these are just reflections, and I'll leave some time for you for all of our reflections and questions. But humility has been a large part of my spiritual path. It was hard won at some point in my 20s after a lot of struggle, but I don't take it for granted. So humility, what is humility? It's non-struggle. It's non-interference. It's actually the easing of the comparing mind, which is so fundamental in our conditioning. The mind that says better than, worse than, the same as. It starts to relax and ease up on us. And then the possibility of connection with ourselves and others is amazing. So this is actually from the 12-step tradition. I see humility for today as the safe and secure stance midway between violent emotional extremes. It is a quiet place where I can keep enough perspective and enough balance to take my next small step up the clearly marked road that points towards eternal values. As I thus get down to my correct size and stature, my self-concern and importance become amusing. So that's from Bill W., one of the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I want to go back to the body, this theme of peace and ease, because the thing is that we can do a lot of mindful breathing, and we do. We can do a lot of loving kindness practice, and we do. All the tools. And some of us, myself included, historically, have found that after a lot of mindful breathing and a lot of loving kindness, that sometimes, for various different reasons, it could just be as simple as this culture, which is going faster and faster and faster and faster, that actually at the most visceral level of the physical energetic body, there is not natural peace and ease that is shining forth. For some of us, that manifests as a low-grade anxiety. I'm really noticing, and I'm not sure, I'm not a therapist, so I don't know, but I've been teaching retreats now for over a decade, and what I'm noticing when I'm looking at the forms, and people fill out forms to let us know a little bit about them so that we can support them better, and I'm noticing that on the forms, there's an increasing amount of little notes that say anxiety as something that we as teachers should know, more than 10 years ago. And I haven't done research, quantitative research, and I can't tell you what the difference is, but you just notice these things. Another thing I notice that wasn't so true 10 years ago, teaching retreats, is that we all seem to have, not everybody, but a lot more tendency to jut the neck forward when we meditate. And my theory, although I don't know if it's true, is that it's the screens. We're just spending more and more time like this. Like this, like this, like this. And it's just, you know, really having to tend to that more, to tuck in the chin enough so that we feel where the bottom of the skull meets the top vertebrae of the neck, and really bringing that in as a practice so that there's a sense of a brightness that's not leaning forward, and the ease that comes in the body when we're not jutting forward either internally or externally. So anyway, sometimes it manifests as a low-grade anxiety. Other times it manifests as periods of chronic pain that we've had where the system's just like, you know, having to hold a lot over a long period of time. Sometimes, for various reasons, the nervous system itself gets dysregulated. It doesn't have to be a profound imbalance, just a minor imbalance. And I don't know about you, but I certainly wasn't taught in school how to re-regulate my nervous system. I was taught math, I was taught science, I was taught reading. It was all great, but nobody taught me that. I'm an old educator, so I'm really glad to see the mindfulness in schools. So we need some tools for that, and I'll mention a few. And one of the amazing things about the abundance of the Bay Area is, wow, there are some really skillful somatic mindfulness systems in the Bay Area. So if you find yourself in a cycle of life, if not now, at some other time, where you feel like, I feel like there's this sense of bracing all the time. Sometimes we experience it as waiting for the other shoe to drop. You ever experienced that? Various reasons? Yeah, I sure have. Or you notice that there's just a lot of kind of anxious energy, and you know, you could come up with reasons, but it seems to last longer than the reasons. These kinds of things. Few things really help. And they actually remind the subtle body of its wholeness. And they invite the natural peace and ease of the body, the subtle body, the energetic body, the nervous system back into the foreground. And again, they're simple practices because the nervous system is very simple. It does not care how many PhDs we have. It's just simple. And again, we do them many, many times, the same way we would any mindfulness practice. So one of them is actually something that our grandmothers probably taught us. Mine did. I'd get all upset, anxious, it's going like this. And she'd say, honey, take a breath. You know, this is wisdom in our culture, right? And what happens when we actually mindfully remind ourselves? So something that I was working with a few of the retreatants on this retreat who are working with this is I say, okay, when that's coming up, open your eyes. Make sure that you're actually here and not somewhere else. And then say to yourself, there's enough air in this room to breathe. And then notice what happens with your breath. When I say that to myself, what often happens, I'll go, oh, upset. There's enough air in here to breathe. My whole body knows what to do. It goes, oh, phew, there's enough air in here. We can take a few deeper breaths. The yoga teacher at this retreat that I just finished teaching at Spirit Rock was talking about how at her yoga center, they have a practice. It's so great. I was like, oh, that's one I'm taking with me. A practice called Take Five. And it doesn't mean take 5 minutes. It means take five breaths. And we all did it together as a community at the end of the retreat. Because, you know, there they are at the end of the retreat. They're catching flights. They came in from all over the world. Their whole lives are waiting for them. It's stressful. It can be. So probably people were a little activated. And so we all took five. And what I noticed when I took five breaths, just five natural, easy breaths, was that I liked five. I can take a couple breaths and still be pretty wound up. But if I really take five, by the time they were over, it's like, oh, I feel the difference. So you can always take five. Another one that's highly important is the practice of grounding. And so it depends on the quality of experience in your feet or your hands. If you have achy or injury feet or hands, you would choose the other. Right? You can do it with the feet or the hands. And I suggested it when we were breathing, right? There's an inhale and an exhale. And then we have this tool called a touch point, which basically allows a continuity of attention so that the storytelling mind doesn't take over before the next breath arrives. So one touch point is we can feel the hands, even just now, touching each other, or touching the cloth or the legs. What happens when we do that for a few moments is we start to notice the elemental quality of the hands. So this is right from the first foundation of mindfulness. So you can notice the sensations that we so quickly call hands. Are they warm, cool, pulsing, vibrating, blocks of wood, numb? What? And it's not trick practice. What it actually does when we do that often and whenever we start to feel a little reactive, this is a baseline mindfulness practice for me. I do it hundreds of times a day. I do it so often, I barely even know I'm doing it anymore. But it allows the system to remain settled as possible so that that natural peace and ease that's available through the mind and the body can shine forth. We're not looking for anything to be different when we do that. So it's just short moments many times. But when we're first learning it, you need to take a few minutes so that you can actually feel, okay, I'm very clear on theoretically what these things are and how they feel. How do they actually feel? It kind of leads me to a question. Maybe we'll ask this question at the end. It's like, what does peace and ease feel like in the body and the mind? Maybe we'll save that for the end. It's part of our check-in. So we're inviting peace and ease in here. And I want to bring in an old poem that I bet a few of you either had memorized or do have memorized. And if you do, you can say it with me, because I want to reclaim this poem. We're inviting the peace and ease in. And part of inviting the peace and ease in does not mean that everything that's difficult we're trying to shove out the door. Like, let me just get rid of all these problems so that then I can have peace and ease. We might be waiting a long time. So this is Rumi, the guest house. Yeah? How many of you have had this memorized at some point, some of it? Anybody? Yeah. Yeah, feel free to chime in your favorite lines. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honorably. Maybe cleaning you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whomever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from the beyond. So then I think of Sylvia again saying, invite them all in. Be a gracious hostess. Don't invite them to live with you forever. Just be a gracious hostess. So, sometimes inviting peace and ease in is a cultivation practice, because what we're talking about here is cultivation and fruition. Sometimes we invite it in and we're cultivating. And other times, all the cultivation, everything's coming together, and the natural qualities are shining forth. And we turn and go, what? Now? Amazing. Can be the most difficult moments in our life, and all of a sudden it just shines forth as a fruit of practice. It's definitely why I practice. Can't make it happen, though. But when we're talking about cultivation, there's another practice that feels relevant to bring up. And it's a practice that I call shifting the center of gravity. And it looks like this. Our conditioned states of mind, particularly the ones that aren't so helpful, are the ones I'm talking about right now. So they might be, you know, that you find yourself getting irritated a lot, or frustrated a lot, or jealous a lot, or kind of overlonging to the point of being painful, or whatever your stuff is. And it comes and it's there. And the miracle of mindfulness is that it's all available to be known. Awareness does not care what it's aware of. that is the best news ever, can be aware of all of that without preference, and it goes, oh, irritated. In that moment, through the mindfulness, we have a choice. And one of the choices is to see that, oh, this habit pattern that is so familiar, it's as familiar as my own face in the mirror, has a very deep well of gravity. We're comfortable there and go, ah, yes, this irritated place has a deep well of gravity. We can feel that deep well of gravity sometimes and actually make this radical shift from here to here, which is why I call it shifting the center of gravity. Because, for example, these awakened qualities of heart, like compassion, loving kindness, joy, gratitude, equanimity, generosity, and on and on and on, have just as powerful centers of gravity and wells of gravity. And all we need to do is make that shift again and again and again. And we start to get more and more comfortable there. That's how transformation happens. What if I had lived my whole life in the center of gravity that said joy is not available to me? It really could have happened. It didn't happen because there was this invitation to me very young to shift the center of gravity. I made up the term shift the center of gravity, but that was basically what my teachers were saying is, Heather, yes, very hard. You need compassion. Oh, I could care about the pain instead of hating the pain, wishing the pain would go away, trying to fix it, move it, anything. I could care. That's a shifting of the center of gravity. It creates a lot of ease, even when things are difficult. It allows us to include it all. So I'll share with you one of my poems. Favorite poem about including it all. It's by Izumi Shikibu, so several centuries ago, Japanese practitioner and poet, and she put it like this. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary, mid-sky. I know myself completely, no part left out. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary, mid-sky. I know myself completely, no part left out. So I think that each of us has so many underlying currents about, like, what is the essence of our path in its many forms and faces, the spiritual path. And for me, one of those essences, one of those currents is no part left out, no part. So that has to include the parts that I am currently unaware of and leaving out. No part left out. When the mind isn't startled or angry or confused, peace and ease are naturally available. It's that simple and it's that hard. But it is possible. So I'll share with you a short teaching from Jetsama Tenzin Palmo, Tibetan tradition best known as the nun who spent 12 years in a cave practicing, and an important person in my life. We are so busy talking to ourselves in our minds, we don't hear the silence. Beyond the coming and the going of our thinking and emotions, there is a silence. Filled with knowing. We are conscious, we have awareness, but we are so busy thinking we can't see it, we can't recognize. Beyond it all is an awareness which can see the thoughts and emotions driven by ego without saying, this is me, this is mine. Even just now, it's like, oh, feeling the feet or the hands. Noticing the quality which knows. Before the thinking mind jumps in and goes, what knows? What is it supposed to know? It's right there. So my other favorite quote about natural peace and ease. Again, that bunch of you will know. Sogyal Rinpoche. Rest in natural great peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helpless by karma and neurotic thought, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves of the infinite ocean of samsara. Rest in natural great peace. Rest in natural great peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helpless by karma and neurotic thought, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves of the infinite ocean of samsara, rest in natural great peace. Rest. I love how the quote and the way that he says it, it's imploring us. It's literally imploring us to rest in that which is available, which is the privilege of being a human being living a life. So, many moments often, may they increase and increase.